Thank you, Mason. I love hearing different instruments. They all have their own personality, and I think it helps us to see how we are. We may not all sound the same, but as long as we're all doing it for the same reason, it works out. I just want to do some housekeeping. I know there's a lot of misunderstanding going around. A lot of people, people talk and people misunderstand each other really, really easily. I just want everybody to know that I am not angry. I just spent a lot of time in the sun yesterday. So if you see me up here and I use a stern voice and you see my red face, don't think I'm angry. I forgot my hat, okay? So now that we got that out of the way. Last time I spoke and last time I preached, we talked about Jesus being the living water and how the conversation that he had with the woman at the well and how it took her a long time to understand exactly what Jesus was saying about himself. And then later, Jesus makes the same offer to the people who are in Jerusalem for the Feast of Booths or the Feast of Tabernacles. And he gave this statement. He said, if you are thirsty, come and I will give you the living water and you will never thirst again. There was a prerequisite, and that was that you be thirsty. You had to be thirsty. And we're going to see a similar statement tonight as we study the picture of Jesus being the bread, Jesus as the bread. But why bread? What's the significance of bread? I want to try to answer that for you. Bread is mentioned hundreds of times in the Bible. Actually, almost 500 times, in fact. So it's very significant to the narrative of the Bible. And why is that? It's because it was and it still is a staple food source. Bread is synonymous for just food in general, right? A person could live a very long time on bread and water. I know one of these people. He's related to me, well, by marriage anyway. My brother-in-law, Rick, if you gave him bread and butter and water, he could live forever. I mean, that's all he needs. Garlic bread and butter, he's good. But we use the term breaking bread, right, for eating a meal with someone. And in the model prayer, we're asked, Jesus instructs us to ask for our daily bread. We talked about this morning when Jesus was tempted in the wilderness. Satan tried to entice him to make stones into bread. And Jesus answers this by quoting Deuteronomy 8:3. He says, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. And one of the interesting things about that verse is it's actually referencing manna, which is a picture of Christ himself. So let's go to that verse, Deuteronomy chapter 8, and we'll read the whole verse, verse 3. So Deuteronomy 8:3 says, and he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger and fed thee with manna, which thou knewest not. Neither did thy fathers know, that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. And so to understand, the best way to understand that verse is in the context of Israel's wandering in the wilderness and also in the context of the verses that lead up to it. So the first six chapters of Deuteronomy are dedicated to recounting all the things that the Lord hath done. Everything that he did for Israel to remind them who took care of them, to remind them who provided for them. And then after this verse, the remaining parts of chapter 8, God warns them of the possible pitfalls that they're going to have in the future. And the threat that's on the very tip top of that list wasn't war, it wasn't famine, it was prosperity. God knew that Israel could be conditioned to think that they didn't need him, to think that they had done all of this by themselves. They had not. And this is the snare of prosperity. And this is why many Christians in America struggle. Because a lot of people, sometimes even us, have it backwards. We shouldn't serve God in order to get more stuff or blessings, right? The B word. We should serve him because what he has already given us. And everything we have comes from him, including the bread that is on our table. Why is it? I'm so glad that Sister Glory presented tonight. Because why is it that the poor Christians worship God with so much more zeal and so much more fervency? I had the privilege of being a part of a worship service in one of the poorest parts of the world when I visited Brother Gien a couple of years ago in India. And it's not even close to the same as it is here. The songs are so much sweeter. The listening is so much more intent. Why? Because they rely on God. They're completely reliant on God. They might not know where their next meal is coming from, but they know that God is going to provide it. And so they give him their full attention. And this is exactly what God was trying to accomplish with Israel. It says right there in verse 3 that he humbled them by letting them go hungry. He fed them with manna so they would depend on him to provide daily. And he gave it to them. Manna was something that nobody knew about. Before that happened, nobody knew what it was. Manna literally means, what is it? That's what that word means. They didn't know what it was. They're like, what is it? Manna. Okay. Nobody had any idea what it was or how God provided it, but he did. And that was precisely the point. God will provide everything we need. And sometimes the Israelites even tried to provide for themselves by taking extra for the next day, but that didn't work either, right? It spoiled. God's like, no, you have to do it this way. So every day, every step, just like they did, we need to rely on him. And he has placed us where we are, exactly where we are, for a reason. God is trying to teach us something. He's trying to draw us closer to him, but so often we miss that. Why? Because we think we know better. The grass is always greener on the other side, right? And that cliche is not just true for horses and cows, it's true for us too. That's what we think. It's always better somewhere else, right? Well, growing up, my mom would tell us not to believe that. She told us the grass was always greener over the septic tank. So, but that's what we do. It's never good enough. The weather was better last month or yesterday. I liked it better yesterday. Or I like our old house better. Or if I just get that job, you know, I don't like this job. If I just get a new job, I'll be happy. My mom's cooking was way better. Oh, wait, so young men, where are you at? Pay attention. If you want a long, happy marriage or life, actually, don't ever say that. Don't ever say my mom's cooking was better, okay? Just, I'm giving you a yes. That was the exact right time, Angela. Thank you. But that's the propensity of man, okay? That's what we do. And we see this in our text. So if you want to go to Exodus chapter 16, and we're just going to read the first three verses. If you want to stand, if you're physically able, Exodus chapter 16 says, "And they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after departing out of the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill us, to kill this whole assembly with hunger." You can be seated. So between the two water episodes at Massah in Exodus 15 and Meribah in Exodus 17, the Jews were still complaining. They were complaining again. The man's propensity, our bent, is toward grumbling and murmuring. And just like us, the wandering Jews thought the grass was greener back in Egypt. But they were slaves in Egypt. They preferred the bondage of Egypt to the freedom of the wilderness because they missed the meat. They missed the guaranteed meal. They missed the abundance of food. It said they ate until they were full, but now they're hungry. Was slavery in Egypt with meat better than freedom in the wilderness without meat? No, of course it wasn't. But that's the way we are when we're not content. Everything else seems like it's better. In Egypt, the Jews were slaves. They had no union representative. They worked long days for absolutely nothing, no pay. And they received all the lashes they wanted or didn't want. Long days making bricks is not a dream job, okay? I've been a bricklayer, and it's not as bad, but I wouldn't want to do that either. That's not my dream job. And slave labor is hardly something to long for or to dream about. But the Jews believed their stomach more than their back. The Jews complained about their wilderness food versus the slave food. They said that they would rather die enslaved with a full belly than to be free and hungry. Why? Because they thought that they knew better. And we do the same thing. We complain, we place blame. But why is complaining so bad? Because God is the sovereign provider of everything that we have. Everything. The good and the bad. When we complain, we're basically saying, God, you are doing a lousy job. You don't know what you're doing, God. You should do more for me, God. I could do a way better job of providing for me than you do, God. It's amazing to me that God doesn't just zap the complainers on the spot. If it was us, that's what we would do, right? What would you do? What would you have done? God had sent 10 plagues. We talked about that this morning. He sent 10 plagues to force Pharaoh to let his people go. God parted the Red Sea for them so they could cross into the Promised Land. He gave them sweet water from bitter water. He produced pure water from a rock, and yet they grumbled. How would you have treated these disgruntled Israelites? How do you treat your disgruntled and unthankful children? We can only imagine how we would have responded. But what did God do? Look at verse 4. Then said the Lord unto Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. He gave them grace. He gave them manna. And God's gracious answer to Israel's complaining was to give them the full belly that they longed for. And he didn't say that he would sprinkle a little bread here and a little bread there. No. He said that he would rain bread from heaven. It was everywhere. Then he said, it's going to be everywhere, but this is how you have to do it. He gave them instructions on how to gather it to see if they would be obedient. He blessed them when they didn't deserve it. And then the true believers followed his instructions out of faith and out of gratitude. Isn't it weird how that works? We have a need. God provides it. Then we thank him for his provision. We don't come to God to get blessings. And we don't serve or we don't give in order to get something back from God. That's not how it works. The gift has already been given. The blessing has already been graciously bestowed. And we should give back in the exact same way. We serve, we follow, we give out of a heart of gratitude for what we already have. Not so we can get more. Israel complained about everything, the everything that came from God. And yet God gave the Israelites grace, and he gave them manna. You and I wouldn't have done that. You and I would have made sure that the Death Star was fully operational, and we would have vaporized them. That's what we would have done. But God showed them kindness. You and I would have acted like an angry tyrant. But God acted like a loving, providing father. Why? Because he's patient and he's kind. Now, it's not uncommon for unbelievers and maybe even confused believers to think that God was mean in the Old Testament. The atheist will cite how God's slaughter of the Canaanites who lived in the promised land that God gave to the Jews was just, it was mean. They will say, they will complain and say, God shouldn't have killed all those Canaanites just for living in the wrong place at the wrong time. But that's hardly an accurate picture of what was going on in Canaan. God promised Abraham a land, a nation, and a seed, but God waited 400 years before he executed judgment on the pagans, on the Canaanites, and allowed the Jews to move into the promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey. Do you remember what was going on in the land for those four centuries? The pagans were acting like, you guessed it, pagans. The worshipers of Moloch, and I don't know if you know anything about Moloch worship, but you should look it up because it's horrible. They would have a minotaur-looking god. It looked like it had the head of a bull, and it looked like the body of the man, and it had the feet of a bull. But it would stand there with its arms like this, and it was hollow. And they would build a fire in this thing, in the belly of this idol, and they would get this brass idol so hot that it would turn red. And then they would take their children and put them in his arms. That's what was going on. The worshipers of Moloch were placing their babies onto the scalding hot arms of this idol. Imagine the cruel, painful, torturous baby sacrifices. And yet God was patient for 400 years before he wiped them out. He is hardly volatile. He is never mean. In fact, God is exceedingly long-suffering and amazingly kind. The murmuring Jews whined about God's provision for them, but instead of giving them wrath, God gave them bread. Fast forward 1,500 years. 1,500 years later, God was still providing bread for Israel. In John chapter 6, Jesus had just performed another miracle. He fed 5,000, well, it's a little more than 5,000, but he had just fed them. John chapter 6, he graciously fed them. 5,000 plus women and children. And they were near the Sea of Galilee. But were the people satisfied with the bread he provided? Sadly, no. Look at John chapter 6, verse 26. Jesus answered them and said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, you seek me not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth to everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed." Then said they unto him, "What shall we do that we might work the works of God?" Jesus answered and said unto them, "This is the work of God, that ye believe on him who he hath sent." Then said therefore unto him, "What sign showest thou then, that we may see and believe thee? What dost thou work?" "Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." Jesus knows that they're only following him because he fed them. He understood that they were focused on the material. And he tries to explain to them, but they still don't get it. They ask him, "What works are we supposed to do? How do we do this?" And again, he reminds them that your focus on material things and blessings is wrong. You can't do a work. God has to do the work. All you have to do is believe on his Son. Trust in him. Put your faith in him. Jesus had just provided a free lunch to over 10,000 people. And how did these freeloaders respond? They wanted Jesus to do another miracle. They saw what Jesus did, but now they wanted to see something bigger. They wanted to see a bigger trick. They wanted to see it on a grander scale. Could he feed all of Israel like Moses did? They said, "Listen, Jesus, if you can outdo Moses, then we'll believe in you." That's basically what they were saying. But that's not how it works. The next time an unbeliever tells you that they will believe in God if he would just do a miracle, that's not true. They won't. Because miracles don't convert people. God converts people. And this manna, this bread that God graciously provided for the complaining Jews in the wilderness, was actually a picture of Jesus. And like Jesus, this bread was the bread from heaven. Look at verse 32. Then Jesus said unto them, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world." And they said unto him, "Lord, evermore give us this bread." Jesus corrects him. He says, "Moses didn't give Israel the bread from heaven. God did. And it was only temporary. The true bread is here now. It's being offered to you now. It's forever. The picture was just temporary. But the actual was everlasting." But they respond to him again, only seeing the physical. They say, "Give us this bread." They were still following their bellies. They still misunderstood. But look in verse 35. Jesus plainly tells them what it's about. "And Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you that you have also seen me and believe not. All that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven, not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that every one which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. Then the Jews murmured at him because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven. And they said, Is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How is it then that he saith, I came down from heaven? Jesus therefore answered and said unto them, Murmur not amongst yourselves. No man can come to me except the Father which hath sent me draw him, and I will raise him up at the last day. It is written in the prophets, and they shall be all taught of God. Every man, therefore, that hath heard and that hath learned of the Father cometh unto me." Jesus said, "Listen, I am the bread of life. That it's me. It's not about the bread." They keep thinking it's about bread. They keep thinking it's about food. He said, "It's not about the bread. It's not about food. It's not about the physical. I am the bread. Why don't you understand?" Because you can't. On your own, you can't understand. And still, you know, there are those people. He says, "You can't believe. Why? You've seen me with your own eyes and you still don't believe. You've seen it for yourself. You can't say, show it to me and I'll believe it, because you've already seen it. And still you don't believe." But still there are those people, and they the people who like to sit in the back and they like to carry on their own conversations during the sermon. You know, those people. They were murmuring. They said, "You know, he said he came down from heaven, but I know his dad. He built my coffee table. That's not possible. I know his mom. I play bunco with her on Tuesday nights. How can this be? This isn't right. How can he say this?" And Jesus replies again, "Don't murmur. You're just not going to get it unless God himself intervenes and draws you to me. This is what the prophets were talking about. You come to repentance and faith because of learning and hearing from God himself." And this is why here at this church we focus so heavily on doctrine. Because how do you hear from God? Through his word. And the same is true for the Israelites, the people who were questioning Jesus. If they had truly learned what the Old Testament had to say, they would have embraced Jesus. They would have said, "Thank you, I'm so glad you're here." Some of them did. Not these people. And you cannot come to Christ without being drawn by the Father. And you cannot be drawn by the Father without hearing the gospel. That's how it works. Whosoever will may come, absolutely. But they're coming because they have been drawn by the Father, because they heard the gospel. Now in verse 47, Jesus reiterates, he expounds, leaving no room for misunderstanding. "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me hath everlasting life. I am that bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread that which cometh down from heaven, that a man may eat thereof and not die." I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. He says, believe on me and you'll have eternal life. I am the bread. Another one of the I am statements of Christ. Identifying himself with God. And he says, listen, your ancestors ate manna in the wilderness, but they're dead. I am the true bread from heaven. Manna was only a picture of me. It was only temporary. It was only for a short time. What I offer is eternal. And this bread that I'm going to offer is my flesh. And I'm going to sacrifice it willingly, voluntarily, for the sin of mankind. Now, the verses following this, following Christ's statement, here, they're really not referring to communion. But they were a spiritual analogy, because he was talking about eating of his flesh and drinking of his blood. But what he was saying was, you need physical bread for physical life. If you don't eat, you're going to die. For spiritual life, you need spiritual bread. That's him. And it goes on to say, but some of these things were too hard for some of these followers, and they left. And Jesus goes to the disciples and he asked, are you going to leave too? And how did Peter answer? He said, where will we go? Only you have the words of eternal life. I think we should ask ourselves that on Sunday nights. Where will we go? Where the words of eternal life are. That's where we should go. Now, just a short while later, Jesus would connect the dots for the disciples one more time. Look at Matthew chapter 26. Matthew 26, starting in verse 26. It says, as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed it, and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, drink ye all of it, for this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. We see the Passover, what we talked about this morning, the Passover is fulfilled. Jesus breaks the bread like his body would be broken. This was the Last Supper. This was the last Passover, because God's lamb would be sacrificed once and for all. That was the end. There would be no more Passover. But now there's a new ceremony. And the new ceremony is in celebration of a new covenant. Now, I don't know if you know this, but covenants were finalized with the blood of a sacrifice. That's what they do. At the end, once everybody agrees, they would make a sacrifice, and the blood of that sacrifice was the stamp that covenant was sealed. This new covenant was sealed with Christ's own blood. And what we're about to do tonight is just a picture. It's just something to remind us of that new covenant and what Christ did to finalize it. He is the bread of life. The bread that God provided to the Jews in the wilderness was actual bread, but it was just a picture of a better bread. Jesus, the bread of life. And talk about amazing grace. The wandering Jews complained, but God gave them manna. He gave them grace. We complain in that he provides us with spiritual bread, his own beloved Son. Jesus Christ, the bread of life, is offered freely to complainers who deserve an eternity of hunger. Jesus offers himself as a living bread so that we will never hunger. Now, as we prepare to close and as Brother Thomas comes, are you a complainer?
No.
I think we all do it sometimes. I need a new car. I need new clothes. I hate this house. I hate this food. And just like the grumbling Jews in the wilderness, you and I complain constantly. I don't like this, or I don't like that. I want to do it this way. I don't want to go here. I don't want to go over there. I can't stand this, or I can't stand that. But our complaining insults God. He offers us the bread from heaven instead. Our murmuring offends God, and he gives us his Son. Our whining is a slight against God, and he provides the food that forever satisfies. Now, if you have tasted of the goodness of God and believed on his Son, then you know that nothing satisfies like he does. You know that the bread of life is better than any physical provision. You have been pardoned and you've been purchased by the King. Despite your grumbling, despite your complaining, despite your whining, God loved you and he provided for your vast spiritual need. But if you have not partaken of the bread of life, and now you realize that you're starving, what are you waiting for? Why would you starve to death? Come to Jesus, and you'll never be spiritually hungry ever again.